0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Jimmy Carter, the 39th President of the United States of America, President from 1977 to 1981, won the Nobel Prize, was a first-term president. He has announced, or his family have announced, as you probably heard in the last month, that his end is near, and he's a man of great faith and a man who accepts his fate. And he's now at home undergoing, in the presence of apparently all his children and grandchildren, as of today, are gathered around his bedside. And Joe Biden, President Biden, announced, or let it slip rather a few days ago, that Jimmy Carter asked President Biden to deliver the eulogy at his funeral, which is, I don't know if people are normally asked beforehand, would you do the eulogy at my funeral? But he has asked, and he didn't make any particular demands. But Jimmy Carter has visited Ireland on a number of occasions after he was president. And indeed, I was at an event in Ballyfermot about 15 years ago where the great Finbar Fury, also from Ballyfermot, Finbar turned the sod in a housing development which was funded and encouraged by the Jimmy Carter Foundation, because that's what he was doing. So he's done incredible work. Michael Martin. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe, to you and your listeners.
And you met Jimmy Carter.
I met him briefly, yes.
Tell us.
Well, I was in California at the time. I was there as a visiting scholar at the University College of Berkeley, the University of California College of Berkeley. And I saw a notice one evening that he was over in a place nearby called Corte Madeira.
Okay.
And he was doing a book signing, you know. And I had sort of long admired his efforts in the Middle East. And things like that. I thought he was kind of a stand-up guy. So I went over and, you know, stood in line with others and got to meet him briefly and exchange a few words while he signed a copy of his book for me.
But he's written a number of books. Which one was that, yeah, do you remember?
Well, it was the one called We Can Have Peace in the Holy Land. I kind of admired the fact that he had done a lot of work and was responsible really for the Camp David Accords and the agreement that came after.
Right.
While it all mightn't have turned out the way he wanted it,
well, in truth, it was the most hopeful moment in that intractable conflict. The most hopeful moment probably was the Camp David Accords under Jimmy Carter's leadership. So. And that's, isn't that why he was awarded a Nobel Peace Prize? And tell us,
exactly,
what was the setup like? Does the former president have, like, he would have been, he's 98 now. He's the longest, the oldest living former president and the longest living president, if you follow me, at 98.
Yes, yeah.
What did he have? He'd hardly have a security. Who'd interfere with him?
There was Secret Service, or maybe not so Secret Service, but there was clearly security at the venue. It was a large bookstore in Corte Madeira, but there were security there for him at the time. And I'm not sure if all past presidents get us, but they were certainly there. And maybe, you know, the subject being topical as it was, they wanted to have security. But there was security and evidence all right there. But he just came across a very pleasant man, and exchanged a few words. And, you know, in the tradition of Americans, you don't get it much in Ireland, but he asked me about my interest. I said, well, I served in the Middle East, you know.
Well,
and he said, well, thank you for your service, sir. He said to me.
Which is a phrase they use every, as they call them, patriots in the States who've been in the services. Who did you serve with in the Middle East, Michael?
I was with I was in the Navy for 23 years, and I served out in South Lebanon in UNIFIL with the 31st Component and the 76th Battalion, and it was 94, 95, so I did the usual 6.5 month stint there. But I'd always had an interest in the Middle East anyway, long before I went. I used to read books about the Middle East from the local library down in Inchicore. So I used to get down there from Drimna, and even as a youth, I was interested in the whole thing. But I think President Carter really had an understanding of it, of the whole Middle East and all the complexities of it that maybe other presidents didn't have, or other world leaders. You know, I mean, he sat down and met with all sides, and that was truly historic. And I remember, even though I wasn't deeply involved or anything, but I remember the Camp David Accords, thinking, oh my God, this is, you know, historical, it's monumental, you know, an Egyptian president and an Israeli prime minister meeting, you know. Yeah, so I was really impressed by all of that, so I just couldn't miss the opportunity to go and meet him, and just exchange those couple of words and get the book.
The book signed. And by the way, how did he present? Is he laid back, or is he suited,
as they say? He was a very sort of a gracious man. He was in shirt sleeves now. It was an evening time, and he was in shirt sleeves, but a very sort of a warm individual, you know, greeted you with a smile. You could tell, you know, when he asked a question, he was listening to what you were saying in answer to him. And he came across to me, anyway, as a very warm, gracious individual. That would be my recollection of you know, meeting him, brief and all, as it was.
Okay, here is, as I say, he's at home now in Plains, where he's lived and where the Jimmy Carter Library is. And he's at home. He was in hospital and he asked to be brought home for his final days, and he's surrounded apparently by his children and his grandchildren. Here is Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, speaking in 1977.
Tomorrow will be 2 weeks since I became president. I've spent a lot of time deciding how I can be a good president. This talk, which the broadcast networks have agreed to bring to you, is one of several steps that I will take to keep in close touch with the people of our country, to let you know informally about our plans for the coming months. When I was running for president, I made a number of commitments. I take them very seriously. I believe that they were the reason that I was elected. And I want you to know that I intend to carry them out.
And people will remember, one, he was a peanut farmer. Secondly, he was a pastor, and he's actually he's been a pastor every Sunday up to quite recently, and again in Plains, in Georgia, where he lived. And he's one of the few presidents, Michael, whose reputation is actually one of the few politicians, I suppose, whose reputation has actually increased since he retired from the White House.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me. I suppose in political terms, you know, there was a couple of things that people would have said, you know, he failed at, you know, and he was very unlucky as well with a rescue operation that went wrong. But he, like, that sort of spirituality emanates from him. You know, I don't mean kind of religious-like, but as kind of a human warmth from him. And, you know, I had only met him briefly, but was very struck by that. And I think everything that he's done since, and when he got into the labyrinth of Middle Eastern, you know, problems, he met them all. You know, he met the guys in the back streets, and he met the presidents and the paupers, as it were. And you just get a sense that he was extremely genuine in his efforts. You know, you often hear people saying, oh yeah, we want world peace and we want this, that and the other. But you get a sense of him, you know, wanting it from a spiritual point of view and from a humanitarian point of view. That's been my impression of him over the years. And he continued, as far as I know, with that kind of work after he went on. Like, even that book in 2009 was sort of saying, look, it can be done, it can be done. And You know, that would be my sense of him, that he had deep conviction about humanitarian difficulties and problems. Like, he recognises the complexities. You know, you often hear complex issues being trivialised. You know, he recognised the complexities of the issues and the settlements on the West Bank and the difficulties with security in Israel, all of those sort of things. He sort of had a humanitarian understanding of them. So,
He was a member of the Elders, you know, that organisation set up by Nelson Mandela, and our own President Mary Robinson was still is a prominent member. But Jimmy is not just an elder at the minute, Jimmy Carter. He's Elder Emeritus. In other words, he is the oldest surviving elder. So he has a titular. Well, I presume the peacemaker, much you've just said about Camp David. Given that Jimmy Carter has asked Joe Biden, which I think is, I don't know if you've ever heard that before, people before they die saying, would you do my eulogy? But I presume that's going to be one of the prominent themes in his eulogy. That is, his the peanut farmer, joined the Navy, a pastor, almost an accidental president. Then the whole Iran hostage crisis fell right on top of him, and there was a disastrous rescue mission. Ronald Reagan was his opponent. Reagan, obviously being his opponent, jumped on that whole debacle, and Jimmy lost the White House after one term, which is unusual. What do you think we're going to hear in the eulogy?
Well, I think there's a lot of positive things that will be said about him, because I think he did carry through on his conviction, you know, of trying to, you know, establish peace in a very conflicted part of the world. So I think that's going to be a major theme in President Biden's address. Now, I haven't heard of anybody else before Joe being booked to do a eulogy.
I've heard
a few people saying, well, this is what I'd say if it was me. But I haven't heard of that tradition before. But, you know, from observations of Carter over the years, I think he would have discussed that in a very calm way with all of his family, and, you know, that they'd be well aware of us. And but I think there's lots to say about it. I think the world needs more people like him, you know.
And Jimmy, well, they always cross the aisle, it seems, in the States when there is funerals. Well, the only occasion wasn't when Donald Trump, the McCain family, asked Donald Trump not to come next or near their father's funeral, even though both of them were in the same party. But Jimmy Carter gave the eulogy at the funeral of President Gerald Ford, who was a Republican, as you know. Here's a little extract from it.
Notes as I prepared for this eulogy reveal a list of more than 25 different projects on which Jerry and I have shared leadership responsibilities. He and I were both amused by a New Yorker cartoon a couple of years ago. This little boy is looking up at his father, and he says, "Daddy, when I grow up, I want to be a former president." Jerry and I frequently agree that one of the greatest blessings that we had after we left the White House during the last quarter century was the intense personal friendship that bound us together. During our closely contested political campaign, as Don just reminded me, we habitually refer to each other as my distinguished opponent. And for my own benefit, while I was president, I kept him fully informed about everything that I did in the domestic or international arena. In fact, he was given a thorough briefing almost every month from the head of my White House staff or my national security advisor. And Jerry never came to the Washington area without being invited to have lunch with me at the White House.
And that's Jimmy Carter there delivering the eulogy at Gerald Ford's funeral. And as we say, the topic today is the reason he's in the news is that Joe Biden revealed in the last 24 hours that Jimmy Carter recently asked him to deliver the eulogy. And then, as you know, in the last 2 months, Jimmy Carter left hospice care and asked to be taken home to his family and where he is now. And apparently he's on a 24-hour basis now surrounded by his family. Michael, you mentioned the Navy. Are you still connected? Well, Jimmy Carter was in the Navy as well, the American Navy. Are you still connected with the Navy? Where are you based?
Yeah, I'm based in Cove. I served for 23 years. And you know something? It's like a family that you never leave, Joe. And there's a group that meets now regularly. And what was decided for us, we were only meeting each other at funerals. So a great former Navy colleague of mine called Sam Feely started us up this thing where we meet once a month. Now, in the Navy, you don't get a coffee break. You get what they call a stand-easy.
Okay.
So Sam organises this every month, and we meet each other. Instead of just meeting at funerals, we meet and have a coffee every morning, once a month on Friday morning. So still have those connections, but you never start to leave it, and you never leave your love for it, you know.
What you say, well, isn't there a lot of people leaving the Navy? Isn't that the problem?
There's a huge problem with lots of people, and we'd have a lot to say about that.
What would you say? Well, tell me what you'd like to say about it then. Why can't we staff our ships?
Yeah, well, in my view, and I mean, I haven't been in the Navy since 1998, but one of the things, though, that I say to people is the Navy has always been under-resourced. Now, some of my colleagues in the Army don't like to hear this, but what happened was the Irish Navy was set up almost like an accident of birth, because what happened is when the treaty is signed, Article 6 and 7 specify that Britain's going to maintain responsibility for our coastal defence. So the army, you know, a new Irish state army is set up and they toddle along. And when the British leave in 1938, it's the army that set up the Navy.
Okay.
And even in the original name, the Naval Service, they saw it as a small service to augment their duties. And any resources, men, funding, or anything else that was ever needed for the Navy always went through what I used to call and drive them mad, the jolly green filter. So even in the command structure, the head honcho of the Navy had to make an application for resources or ships or anything else through the Army. And they saw their role as being more important. So the Navy was always starved. One of the things that helped us was, when we joined the European Union and the limit was extended out to 200 miles, we got more shipping and so on. But it's always been a problem, and it's always been a case. The other problem too is that they treat, in terms of pay and conditions and stuff like that, they want to treat everybody like they're public servants. Now, there is no job in the country that is similar. To be out there 24 hours a day, 3-4 weeks at a time, you might get a week back ashore. You may have time off during that. You may have to come in for duty. And they just don't seem to be able to find a mechanism to overcome, the sort of hardship that's involved. And modern people want to, nowadays, we all came out of places like Drimna and Ballyfair and Crumlin back in the day. It was a big adventure for us. Young people today are better educated. They've more expectations.
Yeah.
And they should be paid properly. And the government and the Department of Finance and people should be listening to groups like PD4 and RACO, the representatives.
So the conditions and the pay need to match the calibre of the people at this.
Well, they need to match the demands on them, yeah.
And the calibre was always great, and they were always great in our defence forces. Stay there, Michael. Trevor Laffin. Trevor.
Hi, Joe.
This whole idea of Jimmy Carter asking somebody to do, obviously before he dies, to do the eulogy, even though he knows and he believes his passing is imminent. What happened to you, Trevor?
Yeah, Joe, it was a few years ago now. A friend of mine was very sick with cancer.
Okay.
Dina was from Whitegate, and I was dropping her up to the CUH one day for her checkup.
The hospital, yeah.
And she knew she wasn't going to survive.
Okay.
On the way up in the car, she said to me, listen, she said, I'd like you to deliver my eulogy.
Right.
And I said, hey, hang on now a second, change the subject here, we talk about something else. No, she said, I want you to deliver it. And if you don't make the congregation laugh, you'll have failed me and I'll come back and I'll haunt you.
Okay.
I said, now, oh, yes, that's great, yeah. No, no pressure.
And did you say yes? Did you say? Well, what did you say?
I don't know what I said, sorry. I suppose I must have told her that I would, that I'd look after it. I think she was trying to take the pressure off her husband, you know, Simon, that maybe he would have found it too difficult or something.
So when she passed...
Yeah.
Had she told her relatives that she wanted you to do the eulogy?
Well, she had told Simon, her husband, all okay. right, and I suppose the family, but...
And you fell in step?
I fell in step, and I wasn't sure even going up to the podium what exactly I was going to say to make people laugh, but I told that story as a kind of an intro to maybe something would jog my head and I'd come up with some bit of a story. But as soon as I told that story, people started laughing, and they said, thank you, my job is done.
So you didn't write the eulogy beforehand?
I had roughly, I kind of was doing it off the top
and how
of
much,
my head.
Really. How much, sounds a bit more, how much notice did she give you, so?
I suppose it would have been, she would have been 6 or 7 weeks beforehand. Okay. And did actually, you... like, I knew her for years. Yeah, we were involved with Chernobyl kids and that for donkey's years, a lot of us. So it wouldn't have been a difficulty just rattling out her eulogy anyway.
Yeah, well done. And were you
but
happy?
The idea of having to make people laugh was kind of putting a bit of pressure on the whole thing. But
and were you happy
her,
with it?
Herself.
Were you happy with it at the end?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Once the audience gave a bit of laugh, she actually did it herself. She made them laugh herself.
Okay.
It was her idea.
And Trevor, how are you keeping?
Good. Okay. I'm at home at the moment, just recovering from a bit of spinal surgery.
But I don't
think I need anybody to write a eulogy.
That's what I was
going to
say. Have you anyone in mind that you'd like to deliver a eulogy?
There was a buddy of mine, Joe Biden. There was a buddy of mine in hospital about 15 years ago, and he was after having a bypass. And I went up to see him. And he was a bit of a character on a ball hopper. But I tapped my jacket pocket and I said, don't worry about anything. I have it all written down in here for the eulogy. And he started laughing and it hurt him when he laughed. So the more that only encouraged me to go on more with it, because that's the kind of fella that's the thing he would do himself.
The morbid says
he won't. So I'd have a few guys lined up all right to give it a shot.
Oh, would you? Yeah, okay. Would you like a eulogy?
Trevor is being very modest. He's a fabulous writer, first of all, a very humorous one, and I don't believe that he was ever stuck for words either, Joe.
Trevor, okay.
this is live line from Cove today with Mick and myself.
Oh, you're in Cove as well. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Mick, would you like Trevor to do your eulogy and Trevor, whoever goes first?
There'll be too many people that want to say rotten things about me, so.
Okay.
But Trevor is a good man to do the job, all right.
Okay, yeah. You mentioned, see, it's a small world. You mentioned Chernobyl and the nuclear disaster, and the other nuclear disaster that predated Chernobyl was Three Mile Island, and Richie Sinnott in Wexford has a connection between Jimmy Carter and Three Mile Island nuclear disaster. Go ahead, Richie. You there, Richie? Joe at rt.ie, 5-1-double. Come into me, Richie. Go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me, Joe?
Yes, loud. Yep.
Yep, okay. Yeah, Jimmy Carter, I think it was from his service days. He was a nuclear technician. And when Three Mile Island happened, he wanted to help. And against the advice of his Secret Service agent, who didn't want to be anywhere near the place, and a whole lot of other people, he flew down there and based himself there until it was cleared, and he helped organize.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was always surprised that he never got kudos for that in the next election for helping save Three Mile Island.
You see, the image of Jimmy Carter is that he was of great intent.
Yes, he was.
Extraordinarily decent, hardworking, but... I was reading an article recently about him. It's from the Brookings Institute in the States, but they were saying he was as a president, he was a failure because he had this belief that governance could be done by relying on good people rather than having overriding goals and maybe trampling on people in the meantime, but that he didn't have the substance. Now, there's the argument, and people say, sure, every Taoiseach or every American president goes up in everyone's estimation after they've left office. What do you think is Jimmy Carter's legacy, or what will be in this eulogy he's requested?
That he was a peacemaker and a hard worker and has done probably more after being president than when he was president.
Yeah.
You'd rarely hear somebody say a bad word against Carter.
Well, that's true, but does that make a good president?
No.
You know, but, especially in the American context where it's the executive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but not, I think part of the problem with America, Joe, is all the cards were stacked against him at the time, and the way you have the two-party system and one hitting the other. And whether he had control, I can't remember whether he had control of the houses at the time, which wouldn't have helped if he didn't. Part of the problem is that he would have been blocked at everything he did anyway. So we see it happening with Joe Biden. The Republicans are doing their best to block everything, whether it's good or bad. So they, even if it's bad, they'll just block it out of party politics. So Jimmy Carter would have had the same problems over there. So no matter what he did, he was always going to be the bad guy anyway. And Ronald Reagan, when he came along in the next election with the Reagan policy, which dictated the way the Republicans run today, that didn't help in the election either, because there's more Republican support with the gun support and everything in America. So I suppose it didn't help Carter that he was more good people will do good things. It's a case of who's richest and who's loudest will seem to call the shots in America.
By the way, you mentioned Three Mile Island. People should look it up. The 44th anniversary of that disaster is on March the 28th.
Yes. And also as well, what was released at the same time, Joe, which really brought it into, I don't mean to cut you off, which brought it into people's view was, it was the same week that the China Crisis, the famous film with Jack Lemmon. Yes. That was released the same time, and when people saw what could happen with a nuclear runaway, people began to see what Carter saved them from. But that's why I don't know why he didn't get the kudos.
Yeah, good point. Ted Neville, Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is our text number. Ted Neville, Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter, Joe. Just the one interesting little fact that I submitted there to your researcher, I think, which is interesting, is that he was actually opposed as the sitting president for the Democratic nomination.
That's right.
No, that's from my memory. Just double check me, but that's my recollection. Edward Kennedy.
Was it not Ted Kennedy?
Yes, it was. Yeah, I think we're correct. Yeah, which was. It would be unusual in general for a sitting president, an incumbent, to be opposed.
By his own
party, yeah. I'm not entirely sure what the particular reason was at the time. Kennedy didn't succeed, obviously, and then he never ran again himself, and his presidential ambitions didn't go anywhere. But Carter was obviously unlucky. The Iran hostage crisis. And the irony, of course, is that in the first couple of weeks after Reagan took office, the whole thing was sorted. And I think Reagan was generous to Carter at the time, in fact, about his efforts to have the Iranian hostages released and that. He was an interesting man.
And remember, if my memory, wasn't it the hostages, and there's been a number of moves, they were released after Ronald Reagan won the election.
That's right,
It was seen as a boon to Reagan and an insult to Carter.
He got a fillip and this was unfair. I think Reagan at the time was generous to Carter in that he acknowledged his own attempts and the bad luck they had and so forth, you know. And, of course, equally at the time in the media, equally of interest to the populace in America was Jimmy Carter's brother, Billy. Billy was the good old boy, the real peanut farmer.
Oh, of course, And Billy kept getting into trouble, didn't he? DUIs and...
I think he did. Yeah. I can't remember the details yet. But he was obviously... They were two opposite kinds in the same family. I think Joe Biden, being a man of somewhat lived through the era, will remember Carter for what he was, a gentleman. Probably too nice a man, perhaps, to be president, as people have said, you know.
What do you think of this whole idea, Ted, of him? A number, I'm sure people have done that. I want to be brought home. I want to be with my family. I know my end is near.
Yeah.
And then to actually make a request. Now, Joe Biden is now saying he didn't mean to say it out loud, but he did, that President Carter had asked him to deliver the eulogy. But then to ask somebody to deliver your eulogy is unusual, is it not?
It is. I suppose, to some extent, I suppose it is to choose somebody who would probably capture your life and to some extent reflect, I wouldn't say not in a vain way, but the good that you did, and I'm sure Biden would recognise that, as most others would. Probably more for the fact that he was a man of his era and a man of similar political outlook and you know, sure, who knows? He might not get to make it for a long time yet. We don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point.
So, but in looking back on former presidents, the only other thought I had in General Joe is former presidents sometimes are often best looked at from a distance. Yeah. And some are reviled in their time. But, you know, equally, look back if a eulogy was now being delivered by somebody on Richard Nixon. I mean, Nixon was a serious politician, the consummate politician, the thinker on the world stage. And, you know, to read now a lot of what Nixon has written and his concerns about the West and how it views China, how it views Russia, you know, Nixon never fully bought into the idea that we were all great buddies. But, you know, it is worth reevaluating people like that who, you know, okay, they had faults, they had flaws, they certainly had. But I think Nixon, you know, Nixon had an eye to what was happening around the globe. Margaret Thatcher, in a similar sense, you know, when you look back on our analysis of where we are and where, you know, call it our enemies are, I suppose we can see our enemies now. You know, those people might well be reevaluated without being forever cast in history as the bad guy, you know.
Was one of Jimmy Carter's benefits was that he wasn't Richard Nixon. That he was almost the exact opposite, wasn't he?
Well, he was the calming president that came after the Nixon era. Okay, yeah, Ford softened things. He came out just in the same way as
Ford,
Joe Biden.
Ford, as we know, was the accidental president he became when Nixon fled the White House, so to speak. Gerald Ford took over, and then he didn't. And then Jimmy Carter defeated him. So Gerald Ford, who was never actually elected president of the United States. Stay with us, Ted and Richard and Michael. Back after the break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now we're talking about this unusual circumstance that has enveloped President Jimmy Carter, President of the United States from 77 to 81, one-term president, and that is that he has said quite clearly nearly 12 weeks ago at this stage that his days, his hours are numbered, and he is at home after hospice care. He wants his care at home, palliative care, and he's surrounded by all his family at the moment. And also that he has requested that President Joe Biden deliver the eulogy at his funny word to use at his upcoming funeral. But Aina Clinch, Aina, good afternoon.
Hello there.
What age are you, Aina?
I'm 12 years old.
And why are you not in school?
I'm in school right now. I'm on the school phone in the office.
Brilliant. And how did you end up on the school phone in the office, Aina?
Well, I was in school and I got called down here and I said, they told me that there was LMFM was here waiting for me, and I was over the moon because I sent an email maybe 3 or 2 weeks ago. My dad told me to.
Okay, well,
and
it's not
about Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, well, it's not LMFM. It's RT Radio 1. You're on Liveline. My name is Joe Duffy. And Aina, the reason is your dad sent us in an email saying, even though you're only 12 years of age, as you've just told us, that you have an enormous interest in Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter.
Yes, I do. I have a big interest
Tell us about him, what you've read about him and what you know about him, and you've travelled.
Well, President Jimmy Carter, the 39th President of the United States, was elected in 1976.
Okay.
And he won against Gerald Ford.
Yeah.
Gerald Ford was president at the time, and it was after the Nixon era where people were kind of left with no trust in their government. But then Jimmy Carter came along, and Gerald Ford, who was Nixon's vice president, didn't win a second term, and Jimmy Carter was in, and everybody seemed to have great confidence in him.
Okay. And you then went to the United States of America?
Yes.
Tell us about that holiday.
Well, I went to New York and Florida with all of my family. Owen, Emma, and then my mom and my dad. And I was over the moon, seeing as it was my first time in the United States, and I had so much interest in everything there.
Okay.
We went to New York City and Orlando. And while in Orlando, we actually had a car rental.
Okay.
And me and my parents have been speaking about going to planes for such a long time now, but I never really thought it would have happened until now.
Okay, so you hopped in the car, the rental car, the three of you, And yeah. instead of going
so
to
it
Disney...
It was only me and my dad.
Only, okay, only the two of you, okay. Instead of going to Disney World, where most people your age want to spend all the time, you started driving to Jimmy Carter's home place.
Of Plains, Georgia, yes.
And do you remember how long the journey was, Aina?
Oh, it was maybe 6 hours, but I like 6 hours too, and then another six hours back.
Okay, so...
But I think me and my dad thought it was completely worth it, the whole thing.
Well, tell us what happened when you arrived. And what age were you then, Aina? You're 12 now.
I was 11.
11, okay. So this 11-year-old arrived in Plains, Georgia. Tell us about it.
Well, I think it was very significant, but it was in the middle of nowhere in Georgia. It was up near... It was kind of in the mid-countryside of Georgia, so I didn't really know what to think.
Okay.
But, and then I remember we went to the tour guide information, and there was this lovely old southern lady there, and she was telling us all about it. And something I found very fascinating was that everyone who seemed to live in Plains grew up with Jimmy Carter, and they still meet Jimmy Carter to this day.
Okay.
I found that very fascinating. And then we got two maps of Plains, and I kept them, and I still have them at my house
today.
Oh,
well done, well done. And did you go to where he was born?
I did. I went to his home place and I saw his high school and his boyhood farm where his dad originally started it. And it was all very fascinating.
He was a peanut farmer.
He was a peanut, yes. And so was his father.
And is it still a peanut farm, do you know, Aina?
It is still a peanut farm because I saw it there and there were still the crops. But I think it was the national park workers took control of that now and they look after it.
Oh, and what does a peanut farm look like?
Well, we went across loads of peanut farms in Georgia, and it's all just kind of, it just looks like an ordinary farm, you know. There's kind of like loads of peanut crops and everything.
Okay.
Loads of the peanut crops were in growing stage while we were there.
And do peanut crops grow tall?
I think so. I think they do. I didn't see them all fully grown, though, unfortunately.
Now, did you go, and is Plains, Georgia, where you travelled with your dad...
Plains, Georgia.
Is it totally obsessed with Jimmy Carter?
Yes,
you follow
him. It's totally obsessed. But there's signs everywhere, and there's buildings everywhere, and there's loads of banners, home of the 39th president, Jimmy Carter. You know.
Yeah. So you went to his boyhood farm, his school, his birthplace, and you went. Did you go to where he ran his presidential campaign from?
Yes, it was originally called the Plains Train Depot.
Okay.
But since Plains was a very small town and it had a majority of Carters, he decided to take it over and run his presidential campaign there. And inside the building, there's loads of information on his presidential campaign. I found it very fascinating.
Well done. So how long did you spend in Jimmy Carter's home place?
It might have been an hour or maybe two hours at most, because we kind of had a limited amount of time.
Yeah, okay. And then I see there's a photograph of you with Jimmy Carter.
Yes, yes. It was only a cardboard cutout, but many people believed it to be Jimmy Carter.
It's a very good one. And then you're standing with a giant peanut.
Yes.
And then you're standing at, and everything is well signposted at the birthplace. Let me see. You have a quote here from Jimmy Carter. No poor, rural, weak or black person should ever have to bear the additional burden of being deprived of the opportunity of an education, a job, or simple justice. That's from Jimmy Carter in 1971. He's a very... Well, what do you think? Have you read books about him, Aina?
I've read a book about him, and it was when he was age 90, he authored it, and it was a look back on his life when he turned 90 years old.
And now he's 98, soon to be 99.
Yes.
And did you know, the reason we're talking about him today is that he is, you know, his family say, and he's saying he's near the end of his life and he's at home and he's surrounded by his family. And also that in the last day or two, he asked President Joe Biden to deliver his eulogy at Jimmy Carter's funeral. But that request came from Jimmy Carter, which is unusual. Did you know that he was a pastor and a minister in a church and did used to preach every Sunday, Aina? Did you know that?
Yeah, I did see that.
Okay. And by the way, have you read up about, I know you're only 12, but have you read up about other American presidents?
I have read up about other American presidents. And I think the reason why I decided to choose Jimmy Carter was because some of the presidents we've seen recently in the recent years, they're a bit controversial, do you know?
Say the least.
So I decided maybe going back into the past and reading about them would have been a bit better.
So if I was to call out one, let me say, let's call out five presidents. I know Trump, Donald Trump, Ronald Reagan, who else? George Bush, W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, and Joe Biden. Who would you say is the best president? Maybe Joe is too early, is it? We say ex-presidents. Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, or Donald Trump. Who do you think is the best of that group of presidents?
Well, I think I'm very fond of the Democrats. I like Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter probably the most out of them, because okay. Other presidents you listed there, maybe George W. Bush or Donald Trump, they're a bit controversial. Yeah,
but again, George Bush is one of the, again, this thesis that when you leave the White House, your reputation grows, and that's happened in George W. Bush's case. Now, it hasn't happened in Donald Trump's case.
Yeah.
Sure,
I think
it's
because he's still remaining a bit controversial, and he's saying very controversial things outside of office.
Bloody right he is. Bloody right he is. And so you never met Jimmy Carter?
I didn't meet Jimmy Carter, but I think I was outside of the house that he was currently living in at that stage.
And were you tempted?
I was tempted, but there was loads of gates, and the house was kind of far back near a forest.
Okay,
and me and my dad were kind of looking through the gates, and there was a security.
Yeah.
There was a security agent there, and he was like, "Can I help you guys?" And it was a bit funny to me.
Would you like to meet Joe Biden when he comes?
I'd love to meet Joe Biden when he comes, and I'd like to kind of express my support for the Democrats and maybe even colleagues of his, you know.
Okay. And what class are you in, Aina?
I'm in sixth class, and my teacher is Miss Gorman.
Well, you're surrounded by brilliant people. I'd be your class as well, I presume, all your pals.
Yeah.
What's the name of your? Give your school a shout out.
St. Oliver Plunkett School in Navan, County Meath.
Okay. And what does your mum and dad do in real life? Are they interested in politics as well?
None of them are actually interested in politics, but some of them are interested in history. I think they're very tolerant of my interest for politics,
so I'd like to tell
them a few stories.
Okay, and Aina, are you the 11-year-old who persuaded his dad to drive 6 hours, well, 12 hours in total, out and back to see where Jimmy Carter was born?
Certainly.
Oh, was your idea?
It was. We were kind of discussing it because they were like, imagine we went to America and we got to see the hometown of your favourite president, you know?
Okay, stay there, Aina, because let's talk to Joan, who has met Jimmy Carter. Tell us, Joan, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you, Joe? Yeah. Mine is fairly basic. That lovely girl.
Lovely boy, Aina, boy.
One time we went to... We were going to Vegas, our probably first kind of holiday away, me and my sister and our two husbands. And we were on an internal flight from New York, just a basic, you know, like a Ryanair flight at night. And he was on the flight and he went around shaking hands with everybody and talking to everybody. But he was such a lovely, kind person. Like, he always stood out in my memory, like, not because he was the president, because of the way he treated the people on the plane, you know, so.
And he came around and greeted
everybody.
What reception was he getting?
Oh, he was getting brilliant. That's what I said. So he was well liked.
Yeah.
But he was a lovely client, you know. I just remember him as being such a nice man.
Yeah.
He was lovely, like, you know.
And would you remember Joan when he was president? Now, it's a good while ago. It's 1977 to 81. It's a long time ago.
Jack
Lynch would have been Taoiseach here at the time. That's how long ago.
But, like, I wouldn't be very political, so I did remember him, but it was just, you know, how we were just excited meeting him. But it wasn't even because he was the president, you know. It was the way he treated people. It was lovely.
And I see someone else. We'll get him back on, I hope, in a few minutes. Another man said, Aina, he was in Disneyland, this visitor was. Thanks, Joan. Joan is in Palmerston. And at the top of the queue was Jimmy Carter, Aina, going into Disneyland. And he came around and he said hello. He shook hands with everyone on the queue. And apparently he was a lovely man. Okay, there's loads of people, madam. Stay with us. Aina, can you stay with us for a few minutes?
Yes.
Are you dying to go back into class?
Oh, not at all.
Aina, this is a song about Jimmy Carter. Listen to it. Please. Jimmy Carter says yes. Can our government be honest? Jimmy Carter says yes. Jimmy Carter says yes. Can our government be decent and open? As the 39th president. Okay, that's by Jean Marshall. Aina, did you know that when Jimmy Carter left the White House, he was only 56, he had no money. He had no money, believe it or not. And I'm going to, one of our listeners, Aina, is going to tell you, you probably know this, you know, you're so well read on it. He's going to tell us this after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. We're talking about President Jimmy Carter, who, on his own admission, is on his last days on Earth, surrounded by his family. And he's asked Joe Biden to do the eulogy at his funeral. And that's prompted people with stories about Jimmy Carter, who was president from 1977-1980. He never, as far as I remember, he never officially visited Ireland as president, though he was here on numerous occasions subsequently. And one of the experts on President Jimmy Carter is a 12-year-old young man from St. Oliver Plunkett School in Navan, and his name is Aina Clinch. And we had to force Aina to come out of Miss Gorman's sixth class and talk to us. Isn't that right, Aina? You had to be dragged out.
Oh, yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, OK. Now, stay with us. Sean Lynch, give us another fact about Jimmy Carter that Aina can put in his encyclopedia. Sean.
Well, I hope, Joe, she can verify this because he is a lovely
person. It's a he,
Yeah, sorry, yeah, that he is. My little thing is I read years ago in a book about him that he was the only president of the modern United States of America to finish office nearly bankrupt.
Okay.
And that was because he obviously, with the peanut farmer he was, in those days you had to consign basically all your worldly goods to a department in the American government, and they would look after your companies while you took office. And when he retired, he found out, to his surprise, that they nearly had made him bankrupt.
He seemed, anything you read about him or see him, he lived a very modest life.
Exactly. I mean, there was another story in the same book of he used to enjoy tennis in the morning before he went into work, went to the job, and some other person who was a nobody, I mean to say, stopped them and complained about the fact that this guy couldn't get on the tennis court because it was always booked out.
Okay.
And he listened to him, and he went back and he redrew a timetable for the tennis courts for all men.
Okay, you're gone on me, Sean.
Okay,
so he did. He didn't make any money, which is, I know he brought out a book. Aina, you reckon he brought out a book when he was 90?
Yeah, I think it was around when he reached the age of 90.
Okay. Donald Fleming, you met President Jimmy Carter.
Yes, Joe. How are you? Yes,
good,
Joe.
Thanks.
We were on a house exchange to Atlanta in Georgia.
Okay.
And as we'll say, the daughter, this was in 2004, the daughter of the house, a lovely girl, stayed in the house because she was working for the Carter Center, and Mum came to Ireland. So the Paige was her name. She invited us one day just to go to the Carter Center. And of course, we said, any chance of meeting Jimmy Carter?
Okay.
And she said, no. I've only met him once. And this was at a sort of summer camp. So we were there in reception waiting for her. And I spotted the limousines And here comes this elderly gentleman down the stairs, and I said, with nobody around him, and I said, you know what, that's Jimmy Carter. So
brilliant.
My son Daniel and Ursula, my wife, were there. We walked up to him, and I had the foresight at least to say, I think, hello, Professor, or hello, President Carter, and which I think protocol demands. And he was extremely warm and open. I was reeling in my head for sort of Irish political involvement that he might have had in his presidency, but it didn't come. So we spoke a lot about his work post-president in terms of development work and monitoring elections and that. And he was very interesting and very warm. And then we said goodbye. So I suppose the interesting piece for us was that Paige's mother had been dropping her to work for years
and never,
and had never met him. And they kind of said, how did you manage to do this one day on your holidays to walk into the next ex-president?
That's the look of the Irish, Donal.
It was a lovely
look
memory,
of the
yeah.
Irish, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was gracious, as you say. Now, Rosalind, his wife, is still alive also, thankfully. And there's a beautiful photograph released by the White House. It's a year ago now, isn't it? Of Joe Biden, President Joe Biden and the First Lady Jill with Rosalind and Jimmy Carter at their homestead in Plains, Georgia. And both of them looked, now obviously they're frail, but both of them looked very, very bright and energetic. Aina, are you jealous now that Donal has met Jimmy Carter?
Just a little bit, you know.
And Donal, would you consider yourself an expert on American presidents?
Not particularly, Joe, but okay. I was interested, and because I've been to the Kennedy Library in Boston, and I had tracked down some of the Kennedy homesteads in Boston on a study visit there. So it is just of interest, really. But I mean, given the way Trump sort of turned that presidency and that office around, it's really valuable now to look back at Jimmy Carter as a true statesman, you know, and a man who had a really strong influence afterwards. I'm sure it's been said already in the program. It's often said he was the best ex-president that the United States ever had, you know. I just think he's an example.
Yeah, you look how, Aina, you come in on this as well. Aina, when you were there last year, how divisive American politics is now.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that, Aina?
Oh, yes, I would.
Yeah. Very divisive.
On that trip to Boston, I made an attempt to get to one of the Barack Obama speeches in the city, and the amount of division and vitriol that was going on outside the stadium, it was packed out, I couldn't get in, but the vitriol was just wicked, you know. It was just very sad to see the visuals that were being portrayed, you know.
And I've been speaking recently, I'm struck by a number of people who love going to the United States, New York or whatever, and said they just found the atmosphere, and you can't mention, if you mention Trump, you get into one row. If you mention Biden, you'll get into another row. There's no middle ground, or Hillary Clinton, or there's no middle ground whatsoever. And Noel Walsh. Noel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Jimmy Carter's mother, Lillian, who was a character.
Yeah, she was a lovely lady.
And?
She was in Dublin in the mid-70s, and I had the honour of serving dinner to her and a party in Juries.
In Juries, okay. And what was she was a character in her own right, wasn't she?
She was very, what would you say, very noble, very welcoming to everybody.
Yeah, and she was a Peace Corps volunteer in India. She was a nurse in her day, and she was heavily involved in that whole philanthropic area as well. And apparently she had a great influence on Jimmy.
She would have been the like Mary Robinson of our day.
Yeah. Miss Lillian, she was called.
Yeah.
Very, as I think.
We called her Mam, Joe.
Okay, God. And had you a big entourage and all, do you remember?
No, very small. We had a dinner for six people, that's all it was.
Okay, and what was the occasion, do you know? Who was her,
hosting her? She was doing something in Dublin.
Yeah, okay. Have you met anyone else very famous like that over the years in Juries?
Yasser Arafat.
Oh, Yasser Arafat, okay. He came up earlier, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And what was he like?
Oh, he was great, he was.
And did you have a yap with him?
I had a couple of words, that's all you could have. Say hello to Arafat before he was whisked away.
Oh, he had heavy security, had he?
Well, yeah, but you were told not to go near him until he approached you.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Kind of sounds like King Charles.
Well, at that time, I was the commissionaire on the front door of the hotel.
Okay, no, yeah, great.
And as the car was coming in, his friend, Mr. Joseph, who lived in Dublin, used to say, my boss is coming and he's going to say hello to you.
Okay.
So I said, okay. But when the car was coming in, security man says, don't go near the car. I said, okay.
Okay.
don't put your hand in that car.
Oh, God. Very strict. He
got out of the car.
Yeah.
He met Mr. Joseph and he brought him over to me. He said, this is my friend Noel.
Okay.
And he shook me hand.
Okay.
I got out. I never washed my hand for a week.
Okay. We're glad you've met them all. Okay, Noel, go to meet them all. And Aina, you don't anymore. Do you like quizzes, Aina?
I'd have a good quiz.
Okay, well, we don't want to put you on the spot, but we'll after the break, I'm going to hit you with five or six voices of American presidents, and you've got to tell me. I know you're only 12, but you have a go. It's only to remind people how knowledgeable you are at 12 years of age on American presidents. That'll be after this break, and then we'll have someone else who has a connection with Billy Carter, who is Jimmy's brother, and that's after this. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Are you ready, Aina? You're there with me, Aina. You there?
Yes.
Well, what's the bell for?
Oh, that's just the dismissal bell.
Are you going home, mummy?
No, I'm not. I'm staying here with you. Don't worry about it.
Good. Thanks, Aina, because you're the backbone of the program at this stage. Okay. You ready?
I am.
Okay. Here we go.
In this office.
No Soviet domination of Eastern Europe, and there never will be under a Ford administration.
Gerald Ford.
I want to talk to you right now about a fundamental threat to American democracy.
That's your favorite, isn't it, Jimmy?
Yeah.
I do not mean our political and civil liberties. They will endure.
I have to interrupt right here and tell you that one of my visits, I won't name him, I don't want to embarrass him, but one of the heads of state that I met with on this visit, he gave me one while I was on the way. Told me the story about the two fellows in the Soviet Union were walking down the street, and the one of them says, have we really achieved full communism? Is this it? Is this now full communism? And the other one said, oh, hell no. Things are going to get a lot worse.
Raise taxes,
Ronald Reagan.
No, and they'll push, and I'll say no. And they'll push again, and I'll say to them, read my lips.
You recognize that, ain't it?
I do, yes.
George Bush. Who's this?
Listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have
Bill Clinton.
Well done. Sorry, well done.
There's an old saying.
Who's this?
Tennessee. I know it's in Texas.
Jimmy Carter.
No, coming again after Bill Clinton.
Shame on you.
Oh, George W. Bush. Sorry,
well done. George Walker Bush. Brilliant.
The United States has conducted an operation that killed
Barack Obama.
Yeah, well done. God, you're on the ball.
Al-Qaeda, a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands of innocent men, women, and children.
You're fantastic.
We will make America strong again.
Donald Trump.
We will.
I think we can all recognize that saying, can't we?
Again.
Oh, good God.
We will make America safe again. And we will make America great again. God bless you and good night.
That was Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Okay, well done. Well done, Aina. Well done. Okay, John Rolfe. John, Disneyland in Florida. You see, Aina was in Disneyland about 18 months ago on holidays, and he asked his father not to take him on the Harrison Ford Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? He said to his dad, will you drive me 6 hours to Jimmy Carter's house? But you stayed in Disneyland. What happened, John?
Well, it was on the way to Disneyland. I was bringing my two children.
Right.
On their first trip to Disneyland, and we were walking up the steps of the plane in Dublin, and I looked up to the top of the steps, and who's standing there? Only Jimmy Carter.
Great.
And as we got up to the top, he shook hands with us. We got onto the plane. He had a chat with us. We got onto the plane, sat down, and we turned right. I presume he probably turned left. Yeah. But anyway, halfway across the Atlantic, Jimmy came around to shake everyone's hands again and have a chat with us. And
what,
it was
he just came down the aisle on his own on the flight?
No, he had a guy with him with a big gun and a holster on him. He had
security
guard. Right?
Okay. So, yeah. So of his own accord, Jimmy Carter, this is 1996-97.
Yeah, I think it was around then, yeah.
He was nearly 20 years out of the White House at that stage. Of his own accord, he came back and he went through the plane and said hello to anyone who wanted to say hello to him.
Exactly, and everyone wanted to say hello and shake his hands, and he spent a very long time doing it because it was a big plane, there was a lot of people on it, you know.
Well done, well done, yeah. Well done.
And I was just thinking, the first time we went to Florida was, there wasn't really any flights from Ireland to Florida, and budget travel started flying to Florida, but they were using Aeroflot airlines.
Okay.
The first time we flew, so I couldn't imagine Jimmy on an Aeroflot plane.
No. That's a great lead. He seems to be extraordinarily affable. He seems
he was,
to be.
A very nice man,
he's
yeah.
still alive, by the way. He's predicting his own passing and organising his own funeral as we speak, it seems. But anyway, he's still with us and he's 98. Thanks, John Ralph. You and McCaughey, we mentioned Jimmy Carter's brother, Billy.
Yeah.
And what was the story with Billy?
Well, when the tries to embarrass poor old Jimmy, they mentioned that Billy had a nice empty beer can collection that he was very proud of.
Okay.
And he was regularly taking photographs of him beside his pickup truck, you know. And poor old Billy, one of the good old boys, drinking in his cutaway T-shirt cans of beer.
And did they not have? Didn't they have a Billy Carter beer?
Don't you know, they cashed in on that. Yeah, someone cashed in on us. Well, I say Jimmy didn't, but Billy did.
I thought, you see, Jimmy didn't drink or smoke. He was clean living.
Well, he was president of America, yeah.
Yeah, and he, I see your argument there, but he also, remember he gave that interview where said he was, sometimes he had to confess to his maker because he was having... Every now and again, he'd have impure thoughts about women. Very, very, very innocent way.
Himself and Christy Moore had the same problem, I think, hadn't he? And he went to get the confession.
He went to confession, okay. Thanks, Ewan. Where's Willie Smith? Willie?
Speaking, Joe.
Okay, you're listening to Aina Clinch, 12 years of age, Mrs. Gorman, 6th class, Oliver Plunkett School, Navan, and he seems to be Ireland's expert on Jimmy Carter.
Yes, and she's a strong act to follow.
No, it's he. Maybe I'm mispronouncing Aina, but Aina is a boy. You're thinking of Aina. You're thinking of Aina Lee Launon when I say the word. It's Aina Clinch. She's 12-year-old and he is in
class. I was listening to it, Joe, and I just sent in a piece that Jimmy Carter was... central to the boycott by the USA of the 1980 Olympic Games in Moscow.
Right.
And I know, look, in serious events that are going on in the world, sport sometimes is down the list. But and he that was over to protest in December 1979, the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And his eyes were on the upcoming presidential election. But other Western countries sort of supported Jimmy Carter, but they allowed their, like Great Britain, they allowed their athletes to go to Moscow. And of course, remember, Eamon Coughlin was fourth in the 5,000 metres. And that followed the 1976 Montreal Olympics, where Russia boycotted the 76 Olympics in Montreal. But it wasn't a tit for tat by Jimmy Carter. It was, as I said.
Why did the Russians boycott the Montreal? Who would invade?
Well, now that Yeah.
Okay, we'll find out. We'll find out. But the reason why, and it just shows you the how long and deep the fissure is between East and West at this stage, because the 1980 boycott by Jimmy Carter, well, initiated as the president of America, of the Olympics in Moscow, was because the Russians had invaded Afghanistan. But anyway,
in 1979.
Okay, yeah. Stay with us. I'll be back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Kevin O'Driscoll. Kevin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Your connection with Jimmy Carter and the Carter Institute.
Yes, I worked on a United Nations development program to assist in the development of new political parties in Indonesia.
Okay.
In the aftermath of the ending of the Suharto dictatorship.
Okay.
And a free election was declared for May and June of 1999. And one of the things that I was privileged to do was to work with the Jimmy Carter Institute on the election monitoring on election day.
Because he led a highly respected institute that did monitor elections, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yes,
and did you ever meet him, Kevin?
Oh, yeah, I went around with him quite a bit during that time.
And tell us.
He was a lovely, interesting man, humble. And I remember distinctly traveling around with him in a Kijang van, an old Toyota Kijang van in the most underdeveloped and poorest parts of Jakarta. And I remember, for example, you know, that obviously he did have some security, but very, very discreet and understated. And I remember him walking down into the depths of poverty, you know, custom-built timber shacks and stuff like that. And all of the women and children in the place actually recognized him.
Yeah.
And in most cases invited him in. You know, they're very hospitable people and they always want you to take some food and, you know, little parcels of rice and stuff like that. And, he would sit down and spend time with people. And then on election day itself, I worked, went around and worked in that same area with his son. His son actually was a regular participant in the Ross Talton in Ireland. He came over for the Ross Talton almost every year. So it was a lovely family, and I met his wife as well, of course, at some of the functions.
Still alive.
He did just amazing work.
Yeah.
I just heard him interviewed there some years back when he was 90, I think, and he was still articulate and making more sense than most people half his age.
Okay. And Kevin, I know you were heavily involved on a policy level with various different governmental agencies in Ireland. So good to hear from you. Aina, the programme is nearly over. I just want everyone is really impressed by your knowledge of American presidents at such a young age. Are you good on Irish politics, Aina?
I do know a bit about Irish politics, and I do have an interest in it. I'd like to speak about it. Well, ideally, I'd love to travel to America and just be in politics there because it seems more lively.
Well, make sure when President Biden comes next month, that wherever the cavalcades are, make sure you go and see them, be it in Drogheda or Carlingford or Mayo. You've forced your poor father to drive 12 hours so you can see Jimmy Carter's homestead. So I'm sure you'll get to the cavalcades, because one of the things I remember, and I was only a child, Dana, was June 1963. Can you even think of that date? June 1963, I remember standing in Parliament Street in Dublin in my short trousers, and who came round the corner in an enormous cavalcade but President John F. Kennedy. And I saw him, and the thing that struck me, and I was only a child, a nipper, the thing that struck me was he was really suntanned. So make sure, he really looked well. Make sure you get out and see Joe Biden, because you'll not only have your great knowledge of it, but you'll have a great memory as well. Aina, by the way, I have a €100 book token in the post to you. So you can buy whatever books you like on American politics. But you're a great lad. Are you off for St. Patrick's Day? You are. Are you?
I am. Thank you so much.
Not at all. Thank you. And Aina, what are you doing on St. Patrick's Day? Are you going to a parade or anything?
I think I'm going to a parade with a few of my friends on Friday.
Okay. Will you thank Miss Gorman for letting you out of the class?
I definitely will.
And when you tell her, we sincerely apologise for dragging you out of the class.
Oh, I will. I think she's listening in right now,
okay.
So she'll be able to hear
it. Well, I'm sure she's proud of all her class and yourself, as your parents should be. And you stay well, Aina, and stay curious and stay interested in history and enjoy the next few days. Today on Sound was Ruth Kennington. Shane Galvin is BCO. Fergus Sweeney is the producer. And tomorrow we're in the Seamus Enner Centre in North Dublin for our special Eve of St. Patrick's Day programme featuring Ireland's best storytellers, Shanna Key. That's a Morrock. Ray Darcy is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.